This episode is brought to you in part by Catchpoint. Catchpoint is an internet performance monitoring platform that gives you visibility into everything that impacts your applications from the end user's perspective.
Learn more at the break.
On Day 2 DevOps, we know DevOps is about people, process, and technology. But people are the most important part of the equation.
At Valentine's Day and all throughout the year, we want to share the love and support the folks who need it the most.
This year, we are raising money for the Trevor Project through a charity swag drive.
Stop by day2devops.com/hugops, all one word, get a shirt, and share the love.
All proceeds will go to support the Trevor Project, and I am foolishly offering to match the contributions.
Let's empty Ned's wallet and support a great cause at day2devops.com/hugops.
Packet pushers.
Welcome to Day 2 DevOps, where the dev, oops, is in the details. I'm Kyler Middleton, and on Day 2 DevOps, we explore those details and how you can learn from the mistakes of others and build a solid DevOps practice on day one and beyond. With me on this journey of learning and doing is my co-host, Ned Bellavance. Hi, Ned.
Hey, Kyler. Today's episode is really interesting because we get to dive into the topic of AI, but this time with an actual practical application. It's not just blowing smoke. We're going to talk about how AI affects the developer experience for open source tools, the absolute need for good documentation when you're writing open source code, and the importance of actually having a human in the loop when it comes to using AI and large language models.
Guiding us through this AI stack are Welly Shah, a principal partner solutions architect at AWS, and Tyler Lynch, newly minted field CTO at HashiCorp, collaborated on this AI-based generative agentic tool to build documentation and examples of AWS's Terraform provider. Come learn what agentic means, first of all, as well as the AI and technical stack these two exceptional engineers used to solve this hugely scaled challenge, and how you can start doing it too. With no further ado, let's talk to Welly and Tyler. Thank you, Welly and Tyler, for being on the show. Welly, I spotted your project that you were talking about, and I understand you worked a lot with Tyler on it too, of it's sort of this self-reinforcement model of having an AI write Terraform documentation. And I thought that was super cool. And I don't want to jump the shark too much on your project, but it sounds like you were able to kind of give this AI tools to test its theories. So like write some documentation, write an example config, and then like run it and see if it works. And if it works, then like you validated that it actually is correct documentation that you can propose. I have so many thoughts about that, but I want to save some of that for the meat of the show. So Welly, thank you so much for being on the show. Do you want to introduce yourself and talk about what you do?
Yeah. Thanks so much, Kyler and Ned as well. Super, super happy to be in here. Sounds good to see Tyler as well. I'm Welly. I'm a principal partner SA with AWS. And then what that means with partners means that I have the opportunity to really kind of work closely with some of the strategic partners within AWS, specifically in DevOps. And I use that opportunity to kind of look at what is that bleeding edge technology out there that we can utilize to help our customers in terms like building a better products. In this case, it's about the Terraform. Yeah, so super excited to talk about this project in a couple of minutes.
And Tyler, welcome to the podcast as well. Before we jump into Welly's awesome project, do you want to introduce yourself and tell the folks a little bit about you?
Sure, my name is Tyler Lynch. My pronouns are they, them. I'm a field CTO at HashiCorp. So I help HashiCorp's customers think about strategic plays. What is the best way to utilize their existing resources? And really, how do they make decisions that are one-way doors? I recently came to HashiCorp way of AWS, where I got to work with Welly quite a bit on building out the Terraform provider engineering mechanisms and Terraform provider support mechanisms for our field teams and support teams. So I did support Welly slightly on this project. This was really like his baby, but I was able to participate and to add some small little bit of help here and there.
Well, congratulations on the new role. That's very exciting, Tyler.
Congrats, Tyler.
Excited to see what you do over there. Let's get into the actual project. Welly, let's start with the problem. What was the problem you had identified and you were trying to solve?
Yes. I like that. I always want to working backwards from the problem of the customers itself, right? Ned, and maybe Kyler, you probably remember in 2021, we launched this services called Cloud Control API in AWS. Unlike other services, this is actually an API. It's not like an EC2 instance, such as a service. It's not like another database. It's not another networking. It's actually like a common API that every other services in AWS can use, which if you remember prior to that, if you want to launch EC2 instance, that means like you have to remember that's run instances. It's not create instances, it's run instances. A function is create functions. But if it's like a bucket, it's create bucket, for example. But this new cloud control API actually kind of give this common like an API control plane that every services is able to use. So that gets a lot of smart people in HashiCorp and AWS start to thinking about, hey, hang on a second, if we can do this, that means we can actually just somehow auto-generate the Terraform provider based off the schema of that resources and utilizing this common API. Sounds like a great idea. People start to play with this, start to kind of, you know, come up with it. And in 2021, it's come up as a preview. And then we start looking at this actual adoption of the services. And me and Tyler has been looking at so many data points at the time. So look, there's a couple reasons why this is not as popular as the standard AWS provider. One is because it's still new, it's still in preview. The second part, we feel like, hey, there is no example at all because this is all auto-generated. The tool that's auto-generated today scan the schemas and generate the provider and doing it very, very well. But then there's no example of how you're actually using it. Whereas in some cases, it's very similar in terms of like the schema attribute from the standard provider. But in many cases, it could be very, very different. And there's like the third analysis we did with Tyler about like how about the resource interactions and everything else. Kind of step that aside for a moment. But this is coming from that. Like if we don't have enough example, there's no people who come there to play with it. And there's no feedback loop to let us know what's going on with this provider.
Real quick, it's also important to note with the standard Terraform provider that people use, the registry contains really good examples. And there's actually examples for different permutations of the resource under creation. So for RDS, you might find one that's like RDS basic, RDS with drive encryption, RDS with this. And that's what we were lacking. And we're hearing from customers that was lacking. They went to go look at the AWS CC provider and to use it. And while the resource and all the attributes were defined, there was no copy and pastable code. And that's really where people get started. They copy, they paste, and they tweak to go. And so that was the problem that Welly set out to solve.
Exactly.
It's a catch-22, right? Like I can't go and explore it and start building the documentation because I can't get started.
Exactly. That's like one of the friction point in here. We can solve that very easily. And because like me and Tyler, we have some engineering background. The first thing we try to do, let's write some code. Right. So let's go and then write some example for S3, some other services. So in 2022, I think we come up with about 100 resources. That's great. Okay. We're getting there. But when we look at the actual roadmap, like there's like 1,000 of resources that will be onboarded to Cloud Control APIs. Like, all right, so how many people we can put into this? There's actually a lot of people who wants to join the project. Say, yeah, I want to try that. I want to learn, etc. But you know, everybody has a daily job. This is not even my daily job. It's not even Tyler's daily job at the time. So like, we have to think big, right? And that's like the day when like AI ML, like a large language model, start to become more sexy in terms like it's getting cooler, it's getting better in terms like giving a result. When we start to play with a couple things, we start with like, okay, we just do a prompt, see what's the output it is. We can talk more about it. How about we adding RAG so it can pull additional context because a lot of this large language model was trained on data that's available in the internet. And guess what? There's no data about AWS CC in the internet at the time.
What is RAG?
Very good point. Yeah. So RAG is like retrieval augmented generations, meaning it's like LLM typically is trained on some checkpoint, typically a couple months, because it's actually take a couple months for that LLM to actually doing training on those like a GPU instances. So that has limitation in terms like knowledge that it doesn't have the knowledge of today. So with the using RAG, you can actually, for example, pull those additional live informations, vectorize it in the way that it can be searched. So when you prompt the LLM, the LLM itself doesn't know about the RAG, but you can build like a proxy systems where it looks for like a keyword on the prompt and then pull additional informations and then embedded it into the prompt.
So we can enhance the inputs and then the outputs coming from an LLM. Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have noticed that general models like ChatGPT and Bedrock just seem to be trained on Terraform. They're pretty good, but for all the stuff that's new, they're not quite there yet. They miss some things.
I have some good stories about that too after we talk about this project, Kyler.
Cool.
So where we are, so we have LLM, we have the RAG, but then there's still potential for hallucinations because yes, you can pull information. It's the context, like LLM, we're going to use that to generalize what you're trying to tell them to do, like write some Terraform. But there is an opportunity for us in here to actually use deterministic model, such as using Terraform schema itself to validate whether we're actually creating the actual resources. That's correct. So over the last, like, I think 12 months or so, we start to see a lot of more explosion of ideas, such as using a tool, such as having an agent, which means like not only the LLM can pull data from the rack, the LLM can be instructed to say, actually just run the tool, Terraform validate, Terraform apply, right? And then get the data out of it and start to reasoning about it. So it's a long way for me to say, like, the problem is increasing the adoptions of AWCC. For that, we need to have an example, because that's a friction point. And the challenge right now is that LLM is trained based on corpus of data available in the internet, including in GitHub, Terraform registry. Guess what? There is no data about AWCC because no one creating it yet, right? So we have to actually be a little bit more smart about how we use LLM so that it can learn, like you said, Keller, and then use it to generate additional data points.
Okay. The information that you're feeding into this model, that's coming from the cloud control service, correct? So can you tell me a little bit more about what's involved when a service onboards into cloud control and how that produces something that your tool can use to write the provider stuff?
Yeah. So this is a very interesting one. I will dwell a little bit, but we cannot expose too much of the inner working pieces of it. But typically what happens is that when service going to be onboarded, they have to write their own handler. All of that handles within the cloud control API. Tyler, you want to add something here?
It's important to note that cloud control is actually a convenient set of APIs, well-defined vocabulary on top of the CloudFormation engine. It's important to note that there's a lineage there and a history. And so with CloudFormation, we write handlers for create, read, update, delete, and list. And they were done with different nomenclature, different verbs. Cloud control normalized that. And so, Welly, on to you, when somebody wants to create those handlers, what happens?
They create those handlers, right? They also create the schemas against where the handlers will actually work. Like, what's the resource schemas? Mm-hmm. And that resource schema is actually will be published in the CloudFormation registry. So anytime they start go live, they publish this in the CloudFormation registry, and then it's available for any client to download right there. And that's where things get very interesting with AWS CC or AWS Cloud Control. It's what Hashi did is that every week, HashiCorp teams go and scan the CloudFormation registry, just look for the delta, find the new resources, read through the schemas, run some validations against it, and then automatically generate the Terraform schemas, including the handler for those resources. And what's really interesting is because there's only one type of API, like one type of CRUDL, like create resource, delete resource, list resource. Mm-hmm. Meaning like the only thing you have to do is generate the schemas, and then you can use this generic handler against that resource itself. And then Cloud Control API under the hood kind of handle all of this, like a logic about how the response back, retrying, and et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
The create, read, update, destroy is commonly abbreviated as CRUD, just for context for listeners. When I saw someone create a Terraform CRUD IAM role, I was like, how dare you? I love Terraform. Don't you say Terraform CRUD to me again.
You actually say CRUDL, create, read, update, delete, and list.
Yes. Yeah. What's really cool to me is that there's already an automation in place that is updating the AWS CC provider based off of the newly published schema changes or the changes that have been added to the CC service. So that part is already automated, and we don't have to get into the details of how that automation works.
Ooh, but can we?
But we absolutely can if you want to. I wasn't sure how top secret any of that is.
It's all public information. And so it's important to note how AWS builds services and the APIs for those services. So there is a tool, you can find it in AWS open source, called Smithy. Smithy is a canonical metadata data structure that talks about here's my attribute, here's the data structure, here is the formatting that's required or the range, if it's a ranged attribute. We define these models, and that model is taken and then use it for code generation. And the code generation creates our public APIs. It also creates the CLI, the command line interface, and every SDK. So all the SDKs are now code generated as well. Go, .NET, Java, Python. And the origin of all that is this Smithy model. So Cloud Control is also code generated internally inside AWS. Once that Smithy model and the CRUD handlers, that's how we get to an API service that's consistent no matter which interface you're using, the CLI, the APIs, the SDKs, or Cloud Control, you now have consistent attributes and inputs.
Okay, that's awesome. And because Terraform's provider, or at least the newest version of the provider SDK, is also extremely well-defined, then it seems like relatively straightforward to build an automation to say, hey, take this and then turn it into something that is in the provider.
Straightforward, but complex.
Right.
Right. There's a lot of permutations and there's a lot of different resource definitions. But that's where we are today, is that provider is auto-generated off of the cloud control schemas, which is the cloud control API schemas. And that's how we do it.
But what it can't do is write really compelling examples that actually deploy properly. And Welly, it sounds like that's where you came in. You were like, hey, I want to use AI to help me with that. So let's dig into the actual solution.
Well, he solicited an army first, just so you know. There was hundreds of AWS employees that were volunteering to go write examples. They had a Jira board, essentially. They were grabbing a resource and said, I'm going to work on this one. They'd write it, they'd manually verify it, they'd Terraform validate it, and they'd copy and paste that into the examples. And so that was our workflow for about a year or year and a half.
Okay.
And Welly said, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah. Coming back to the how pieces, right? I think for us to really kind of make this project successful, we kind of have to wait for those evolutions in the way this LLM works. Like having great model is one thing. Having a RAG is one thing. The important is having a tool to really validate the result itself. So when we start thinking about how we do this, we kind of replicate what this volunteer is doing today, right? So they go and they read the schema, they understand the schema, to read some documentations about the services. Like some of the services, I didn't even know this exists, to be honest. Like you're working for AWS for like, what, 7 years? Some of these services you never heard, because like it's just the rapid innovation that's happening, right? That's just normal.
Sure.
So people have to go and read it about it and then run some tests, write it, have some errors, fix it again, and et cetera, et cetera. So thinking like that's the valid way to do engineering. Like you do tests, you have human in the loop as well, right? So at a high level, how we do this? One is because LLM itself, whichever LLM you choose, likely does not have a lot of this context about the new resources that's available in CC. Just because the checkpoint, right? You might wait 6 months. Yes, you got it. So the first thing we have to do for this LLM is that to tell them to go and fetch those schemas live so that it has the understanding of, okay, this is the latest schema of these resources. Mm-hmm. And after we have that, we tell them like, look, if you need to, you can go and search the CloudFormation documentation, because Tyler mentioned earlier, it's almost like a representation of CloudFormation. So go and search the CloudFormation documentation, read about it, and et cetera. And once they have that two combination, the third process we tell the LLM to do is like, go and try to create these resources. The prompt, I don't have it in open source, but we're going to open source it. Like the prompt is very simple. I say, look, go and try to create resources for this particular provider for these particular resources. And then, of course, the LLM will try to create it. The first version will come up and then say, okay, now go and fetch the actual output of Terraform Validate once you run this code. And this is where things get very cool. I have to pick one LLM. In this case, we use Anthropic Sonnet. Anthropic comes with this idea of like, you can actually let LLM use computer. If you search about it, Anthropic computer is really, really cool. They have this demo where they have like this VNC, like a virtual computer environment in your Docker, for example. And then you tell LLM to say like, go and open a browser and go to Amazon.com, for example. And then because it's a multi-model LLM, so you can understand like pictures, you can understand like instructions, and then you can go and then use the VNC to kind of move the cursor, click and stuff like that. But under the hood, it also have other tools such as like you can run bash command, for example. So what we do is that, okay, we don't need that fancy screen, you know, opening a browser and opening ID. If I want to show this to board member, yeah, probably have that. But in reality, I just need a tool. I just need the LLM to actually make a call to Terraform. So we have this Docker containers that install Terraform in this safe environment. We say like, go and then put your code in here, run Terraform init, run Terraform validate, because that's the easiest way, right? So you just do validation against the schema, start to find an error, you fix it. And then you say, okay, then do Terraform plan and apply. So when you kind of get this LLM to kind of fit this like a historical data, say like the first prompt is I'm doing validate. I get some error, I fix it. And the next one, I'm going to run plan and apply. I found some error and I fix it. This historical context, it's very big, right? It could be like a couple hundred, like a word of lines and et cetera.
Yeah.
LLM today, we can pass like a couple hundred K of tokens. It's almost like a whole book, essentially, right? And that's very interesting for us because now the LLM can reason based on not only the knowledge that it have, not only from the fetch of data from the rack, such as like schema itself, but I can also look at the historical error that it made. Say, oh, I did this, it didn't work because the schema attribute is wrong, I fixed it. And then I run Terraform apply, say, well, actually, no, I cannot do this because I need to create VPC. And then it starts to kind of building that. So essentially, like the other resources beyond just the, for example, Kubernetes cluster. And to me, that's really interesting. I've seen that like, wow, okay, you can do that.
So, Ned, our app's down?
Oh, no. No one can listen to us ramble on. I mean, pontificate about important tech things. But wait, our health checker shows all services are started.
I mean, I guess the app is up, but our users can't get to it. Which brings up a great philosophical question. Is the app still up if no one can reach it?
If a podcast falls in the forest, does anyone hear it stream? Maybe we can talk about this after bringing the app back up.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
How did you even know it was down?
Catchpoint, our internet performance monitor, is showing our app isn't reachable from where our listeners are.
Well, that is a problem, yeah. We could have kept screaming into the void and never have known.
And you, dear listener, don't have to scream into the void alone either. Catchpoint is observability for your internet stack, just like application performance monitoring is observability for your application stack.
And they do it with telemetry from their large, diverse observability network.
If that sounds useful to you, check them out on catchpoint.com/devops. And thanks to Catchpoint for saving the show today. Now back to the episode.
Well, that's just wild because it sounds like something a human trips over, right? Like I want to deploy this resource and maybe I know I need to put it in a VPC because that's like table stakes for a lot of services, but I don't know I need these three other resources to deploy this thing. So I'll try it and it will fail because it needs some other argument to be filled out. So then as a human, I'll iterate over and over until I have a configuration that actually deploys, but you kind of set up the same series of steps, but now the LLM is doing it. Is there a control flow in here through something like Python? I think Python's what you're using as the programming language. Is there a control flow that checks to see if validate returned an error and then sends it back to try it again until the validate passes?
It's a very simple, actually, again, a lot of this code, we just take an example from Anthropic. Anthropic has a quick start about how to use computer use. It's very cool. A lot of this new LLM these days is very different from like the first thing we saw in 2022, 2023. In the past year, when you're making a call to LLM, typically you just have a prompt and it's a response. Yeah, okay, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But these days, a lot of this LLM actually has this format to say, send a prompt as the user, and here's my response as an assistant. And beyond that, you can also say like, as assistants, I also have response from the tool, for example. So this is like a checking point within the actual response itself. So LLM this day is actually responding back like in the API rather than just a wall of text. Right? Because in the past, you have to say like, okay, stop word is assistant or something like that. But these days, it's become an API. So this means like when we say as a user, I want to create the resources, the assistant start to kind of create the, okay, I'm going to need to do this, 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 and this. When you call a tool, for example, it's actually going to make a marking in the API response to say, hey, this is the output from the tool. And then it's actually kind of give a result like this output is either true or false in terms like, did I get like a exit zero or I get exit one? And what's the error message of that? Mm-hmm. So we can just use the like this very simple while in the loop in Python to say like, wait until I get the final output, which is coming from assistant. So we don't even care how the assistant used the tool. We just tell like, assistant, here's your output. I want to see the end result from you as the assistant as well that you say this result is completed. And then we just put like 5 minutes or maybe like 10 minutes loop. You know, some resources like EKS cluster, it takes time, right? You cannot blame the LLM. Like it's actually waiting. Like don't blame me when I'm waiting, right? So for some resources, we have to just add additional time mode. But it's surprisingly very kind of like interacting with human. They say, like, I give you a task, you go figure out, you get 10 minutes, but I'm just waiting for you to come back to me and say, yeah, I'm done. And then we just move to the next phase.
It's wild how that exactly replicates my own sort of methodology for building something. I just like copy and paste something from the Terraform docs and I run it and it has an error. And then like, you know, you do that 50 times until it succeeds and you're like, oh, I'm a genius now. I've succeeded. It sounds like you have replicated my exact workflow with this agentic model. And is this technically agentic? This is a very futuristic sounding word, but maybe you could help define that for us.
Yeah. Agentic, I'm sure Tyler also have a different definition of this. This is like the new hype word that come out. Like there, a lot of people say, oh, we build agentic workflow. I think the truest form of agentic is that I just give a task, like create resource X in this provider and don't give anything else, right? And then you build another LLM on the other side that basically, you know, has orchestration of prompts and everything else to get there, right? But then the end users that basically use this solution, basically just say, like, I want this resource to be created in this provider. You figure out, come back to me in like a couple hours or come back to me in a couple minutes. That's how it works, right? But then the agent itself, which is like, if you look at it from the outside, like it's very cool things, right? But inside of it is just like still orchestration of like calling this LLM, get the response, do something else, and et cetera, right? But then the idea is that you don't see that. Like for the end users, I just see there's an agent in here that I can call. Here's the thing, like one side, there's LLM in here that has to call the agent, right? For this LLM to understand how to call this agent, you also have to give some descriptions. So this agent has to have a very good description. It's like, hey, I'm a smart agent that can create resources for this and this. You can call me if you need X, for example, right? So You got to have to kind of keep that interaction almost like human nature, like in the language, right? So that the LLM itself in here can think, oh yeah, if I have to create resources for CC, then I will call this other agent in here. And that agent has another LLM to figure out how to delete it.
Yeah, I think of it like a finite state engine, right? And each state will have its own context or persona that we're going to inject into the LLM that says, my job is to validate that this Terraform code I'm given works. And I'm going to do that by calling terraform.validate, evaluating the output. And then the next one is, okay, we know we have valid Terraform, or I'll rewrite it until it's valid. I have valid Terraform. Now I want to plan it. And I want to apply it. And we actually use injecting prompts and say, I'm going to be an operator. I'm going to plan this Terraform. I want to make sure that creating a resource is my expectation, then move on to the next thing. That's how we kind of think about it. What's interesting to me, though, is what this gets us from scale. So if you were to look at the AWS CC provider on GitHub, specifically pull request number 2141, you'll notice that this is the first wave of auto-generated documentation with examples. That was the intent. There's 660 files changed. That's a really large pull request.
That's more than one.
Much better than one. We were doing this individually with individuals. And I think some of this is, you know, boilerplate documentation, but generally it is docs for resources. There were some other small things that had to get adjusted here and there as went on. But talk about that workflow, Welly. So you had this writing to commit to a Git repository and kind of staging these up. And then the pull request was obviously validated by humans, human in the loop. But you just did all resources that didn't have examples. Like, how did you stage this up? How did you think about this? It wasn't one piece of documentation. It looks like there's hundreds and hundreds of resources that were documented.
Yeah, so we were thinking about that as well. So should I make this LLM and this agentic workflow create one pull request for each resources and have human to go and go through it? Or should we just do a batches? Because we know like this is all validated, this passed the Terraform test and plan and everything else. So what I did is that very simple. I just have a simple bash script that goes to the repo, look for example that's missing, get the name of the resources. That's a long list, like 700 something of resources. And then I push it to this LLM. It runs for about, I'm not kidding, like 3 days. And the reason it runs for 3 days is because we are an AWS, we are employee, we have our own accounts that we can use, but you also have to be responsible not to, you know, go and then start consuming millions of tokens and et cetera. So I have to kind of set a throttle, say like, okay, one resources at a time, please. Don't do like one in intense, like, so it's running for a couple of days because, you know, I run it, go and watch TV, go back to Netflix and come back. Oh yeah, okay. Pretty cool. You get there and we keep doing that.
The new, my code's compiling, right?
Yes.
My model's running. Don't worry about it. I'm taking a lunch.
Exactly. It's similar to that. And then at some point it generates everything. I got domain TF files and everything else, but it's not there yet. The reason is because in example, you probably don't have to put like what's the Terraform version you're using, the provider configurations and a lot of that. So we have another LLM agents in here that what it does is actually it's reviewing the previous work, right? And this is where things get interesting because LLM sometimes can get like too much into the mission and it forgets the surrounding part. So in some of the example, what we've seen is that, like, I'm going to create these resources for, say, EKS cluster.
Okay.
That one is very complex. Like, it has to have VPC and et cetera, et cetera. As part of the problem, I'm actually telling, hey, as much as you can, use another AWS EC resources so that the resource example looks complete. Everything using CC. It's not always possible, right? And Tyler can comment on this. Some resources you have to have the dependency with standard provider. But as you kind of keep going in the loop for like a couple of minutes, sometimes it kind of loses attention. So the cluster is created using CC, but the surrounding VPC and everything else, I'm not kidding. Sometimes it's using Terraform provider, and the other times it's trying to do like a local exec, for example.
Oh, okay.
It gets wild, right? So we have another LLM in here saying, like, look, there's potential that this example in here is not following best practice. So it's like, critique this resource, find where it can use AWS CC, remove resources that doesn't make sense, like why are you using local exec, and you know, a lot of this anti-pattern essentially. So we have another LLM that kind of just doing a critique, right? Because yes, you can tell LLM here to kind of get the things done, ultimately apply, but the result might still looks bad, right? Because why are you using local exec? Well, there's another provider in here to use. So we have that.
And we call that LLM as a judge.
Yep.
So that's a separate instance and persona of an LLM where I say you're evaluating the outputs. They should all be in AWS Cloud Control Terraform provider parlance. No shell scripts, no Python, no CLI commands. Right. Please validate this is correct.
Would you be using the same model to do that? Would it also be using Claude and Sonnet, or would you potentially hand that off to a different model that might be better at that interpretation?
I like that. We today just using the same model because I didn't build the library to choose a different model. Maybe you should have feature flag to do that. But exactly right, because certain tasks is actually cheaper to be done by another model.
That one I'd probably use Claude Haiku for.
Yes.
Because it's so much less expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, Willie, can we ask you honestly, so you did this, you did a couple hundred resources, it looks like. What did this cost AWS just from an inference, not from an engineering? Happy to talk about your input there, but was it $10,000? Was it $100,000? What did it cost you to go build this?
So actually, I was kind of like curious on that as well. Like I told you, like I leave it for 3 days running, but I was coming back and look at my bills, like, and look at my CloudWatch dashboards and everything else. I think at the end of that 3 days marathon, right? And it's a lot of data processing and everything else as well. It's about like $400.
$400? Like American dollars?
American dollars.
That's staggering.
Wow.
Wow.
I think we're all shocked.
I was shocked as well.
You said earlier that you had a whole team and people volunteering to write this documentation. So we're talking about hundreds or thousands of person hours to do this work. And engineers ain't cheap, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't even want to take a guess at what the hourly rate is for an engineer, but it's probably going to be in the neighborhood of $400.
So significant.
So the comparison of hundreds of engineers spending hours working on this documentation or $400 for one model run is wild. Even if you have someone who has to spot check and be that human in the middle, you have saved tremendous amount of time and effort on the parts of engineers doing work that is not necessarily...
It's table stakes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can have a relatively newer engineer write this documentation, even if they've never had Terraform experience, as long as they can read an API doc, they can go build this and then go Terraform validate, Terraform plan, Terraform apply. But even at the lowest level of an engineer, straight out of college, that's a significant compensation package. And so when Willie talks about 400, and that's public pricing, is that's what we see in our AWS accounts. We only see the public pricing. Mm-hmm. So $400. Now, there was probably a significant amount of engineering effort too. You probably put in 6 weeks, 10 weeks worth of engineering effort to build this, Willie?
Actually, it's smaller than that, to be honest. Like, this is during the whole holiday time, right? People don't ping me for provider requests because everyone is going to holiday. It's like, okay, what am I going to do? Like, what's the purpose of my life when people not slacking me on the Amazon Slack about the requests? It's like, okay, I got to find something else to do. So the actual script that we built, it actually takes just like 2 nights, basically.
Did you build that script using GenAI, like a coding assistant?
Yes. So
of course.
That's also another one. So like I use Python, but I'm also know like a lot of this thing can be achieved using AI assistant. So yeah, I have an AI assistant to help me like how to pull from like S3 bucket, like do it in parallelizations and stuff like that. I just prompt like, create me a functions, download from S3 bucket, parallelizations to 10, for example. Here's the thing, like some stuff is actually cheaper to run deterministically in Python rather than LLM. Mm-hmm. One example of that is like, I was thinking, you know what? I will have the LLM to actually write the template. The template in the way you make a pull request for creating documentation has like a very specific markdown format. And initially I was like, oh yeah, just use LLM to do that, right? It's like, hang on a second, no. I mean, let's be frugal a little bit. And then it just take like another AI assistant and he's like, go and write the script that just inject this template in here in Python. It's like, it's 2 seconds, boom, you get it, right? And you can cut like a lot of latency of calling an LLM, et cetera. So it's a good learning process as well, because you start to kind of think like, okay, yeah, I can drop everything to LLM if I want to, but you gotta have to be smart as well. Like certain things, you can just do this more deterministically in your code by asking another LLM to give you the code. Essentially, right? So it's a lot of LLM that doing the work and me just prompting. And I think we're going to see that. People say like, I'm talking more with my code, meaning like you chat with your code and tell, hey, LLM, what's wrong in here? Can you do something to make it better, right? I ask that question. It's like, hey, is this actually a safe in terms like the trading model, for example? Like I run this in like parallelizations. Can you kind of critique my code and et cetera? So we're doing that as well, right? And finally, I think I want to say human in the loop is still important. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time after that couple hundred resources is generated, it's me just spending a couple hours, go through each example, look at it and say like, what's wrong? Is there something in here I don't like, for example? And that may be the impact to like how I should actually output that in the pull request as well.
All right, I have two important questions. The first has to do with open source. So are you planning to open source the solution so that others can take advantage of it? Because there's plenty of providers out there that can use a little bit of example love. If we could leverage this power to do the same thing for those other providers, that would be amazing.
Oh, yes. Yes. So what I've been kind of like spending my weekend right now is actually to kind of build this into like orchestrations using AWS Step Functions, because right now everything's just running in my laptops, which is fine. But, you know, you want to open source something. Ideally, it's a Terraform plan and apply, deploy this resource infrastructures, serverless. So you can just put, I want to do X for X provider, and then it kind of doing it in this order. So yes, I'm planning to open source that. And Ned, we also talk with like the other folks in Hashi and other Terraform providers, like, hey, yeah, this can be used for pretty much like others. Like CC is that example of new provider doesn't have enough context. So why not try to use LLM to enhance it? So I'm with you. I think there's a potential for others to kind of hopefully inspire and also, you know, improve on what we're building in here.
That's amazing. The other big question I had is the feedback, because you described that after it finished its work, you went back through as human in the loop to review the examples it created. Is there a mechanism for feedback where the model can learn about what you liked, what you didn't like about those examples, and then apply that to the next time you run it?
I think so, yes. So we're kind of doing this right now, but not in the output of the resources. So I said like 700 something resources, not all of them successfully gets created, right? So then we actually use some sort of separate feedback loop. So I have another LLM to inspect the actual Terraform error of why, and then give some sort of reasoning, like, is this worth retrying? Or is this like just error 500 because, you know, upstream dependency issues, right? And then for the one that worth retrying, I will have kind of human in the feedback loop. Like it's just a simple text. Like I tell LLM, if you find this text in the same directory, read it, because that's my human feedback. For example, I tell them like, yeah, this is wrong because, for example, you have to use a different resources, or you can assume like the private certificate is already exists, because certain things is just so complex to orchestrate that you just tell like, okay, you can give up in here because I will assume that I will have private certificates, you know, domain name validation and things like that. So we kind of start doing that. I'm not open sourcing that pieces yet because I think there's still a lot of work to do.
Sure.
But essentially like a LLM to kind of help doing troubleshooting while we kind of provide an input to say, hey, actually go and look at here because, you know, I happen to have the knowledge about that. I trust you can do that, and et cetera.
One thing I want to note is while this is an automated process for documentation generation and example generation, with LLM as a judge, there's also Welly and team went through and did a manual review before they submitted the pull request. HashiCorp also provides and always does a manual pull request review, whether it's a documentation change, an example change, or something like code generation change of a provider. Those all go through human in the review process for all PRs to any HashiCorp owned repositories.
That is super cool. And I want to keep going and talk like maybe three more hours for this podcast, like particularly from like the open source project side. How do you review PRs at scale that are written by AIs? And how do you share your methodology so they can validate it's like sane when you're reviewing a million lines of code? But we don't have time. So maybe we'll just have you back in a couple months when you've solved some of these problems. My final question here for you, Welly, is like in two nights, you may have saved several million dollars in employee cost with some scripts. And is AWS ever going to let you work on anything other than AI ever again?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question, like Kyler. Internally in AWS, we always say like, if we build generative AI, the goal is to make every engineer a superstar engineer, that 10x engineer, essentially. Yeah, so like maybe we're not doing what we're doing today, like a writing an example, but that gives me opportunity to kind of think about the bigger stuff, like what we're going to do with like a reviewing bug fixes, pull requests, and etc. Right. So yeah, I think it's always the mission is like how we accelerate everyone's knowledge to be that 10x engineers. Right? If the whole industry has double, triple the number of 10x engineers, that's just amazing. Right. It means like we're going to come up with a better solution for certain things. Our life is getting easier, getting more meaningful. So I'm all for it. So to me, like generative AI is not here to kind of like replace Welly from doing this because one, it's not even my daily job or so. But if the LLM can do my daily job and I can do something higher values, yes, right? But I still want them to do my laundry as well. So that's my wish list.
Me too. Well, this has been wonderful. Welly, if folks want to see, you know, more about this project or more about your other projects, where can they find you on the internet?
I'm not super social, but so LinkedIn is, I think, the best place to find me. Other than that, some folks know my emails and I reach out back on email as well.
That sounds perfect. We'll have links to anything that you'd like to share in the show notes. And then Tyler, where can folks find you as well?
Primarily, you can find me on LinkedIn. I do respond to email as well, but generally I'm very active on LinkedIn. Sometimes I read a lot of dev.2. I never read Reddit. I've just never actually been on it. And AWS repos, you can find me. I will respond to answers. It's their Stack Overflow essentially, but it's by verified experts. And so I do respond to a lot of AWS repos.
That's perfect. Thank you both so much for being on the show. This has been incredible.
Thanks you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you to our guests, Welly and Tyler, for appearing on Day 2 DevOps, and virtual high fives to you, dear listener, for tuning in. If you have suggestions for future shows, we would love to hear them. Really, we would. Hit either of us up on LinkedIn or send some feedback via packetpushers.net/follow-up. You can find me, Kyler Middleton, blogging over on letsdodevops.com and my stupendous co-host, Ned Bellavance, at nedinthecloud.com. And we're both very, very active on LinkedIn. Our family members miss us. Stop by and say hello. If you like engineering-oriented shows like this one, visit packetpushers.net/subscribe. All of our podcasts, newsletters, and websites are there. It's all nerdy content designed for your professional career development. In particular, check out the recently launched In is for Networking show. Ethan Banks and Holly Metlisky take things back to basics, like what is a VLAN and what's inside a packet. If you're a DevOps engineer who missed out on Networking 101, this show will bring you up to speed. Until next time, just remember that doing DevOps is awesome, and so are you.